We are going to move down now to number 16, 2427, in regards to Jacqueline McGill, CBT. Tracy, if you can read the front load.
Case 2427, the complainant is the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The respondent is Jacqueline B. McGill, CBT. At the August 16, 2023, Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board meeting, the board opened investigation with respect to the respondent's conduct after reviewing documents submitted by an anonymous source. Respondent was advertising veterinary services to publicly owned animals, including wellness exams and vaccinations. This did not go in front of the investigative committee. It was brought to you for the review and discussion.
Okay. Thank you. So we are the respondent. We do have Ms. McGill is present today, if you'd like to come forward. Thank you for being here. I can now give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jacqueline Brittany McGill, and I wanted to take a few moments to tell you a little bit about myself. I graduated high school with high honors. I was on the dean's list every semester in college until I graduated with a bachelor's in equine science and graduated summa cum laude from my veterinary technician program. I do not state these accomplishments to brag about myself, but instead to illustrate that I am not the type of person to intentionally break or undermine rules. I have no desire to be in violation of any of the statutes put forth by the board and will happily make whatever changes you deem necessary to remain in compliance with the rules and regulations in place for the veterinary technician profession. I do want to reiterate that I stated in my letter of response that I have not and have no plans or desires to prescribe medications, make any diagnoses, or perform any surgeries. I'm also very clear with people who call me that I cannot do any of the preceding and refer them to a veterinarian if those are services they are in need of. I apologize if any of my marketing materials make it seem as though I am able to perform those services. And again, I will happily and hastily make any necessary changes to remain in compliance and good standing. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's see, Mr. Loheed, you are the lead on this case.
So I apologize, I'm a little surprised that that wasn't my list.
I was going to say, I was the lead on this
okay.
one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, shoot. So I'm glad you were confused, because it was all right. I was like, you got this. We're going to reset here. So yes, I was the lead on this case. We did get the response, and I appreciated that. However, the website is up and running. So I just wanted to have a little bit of a discussion with the board members here. I read the materials that were submitted anonymously. I did read the response, and then obviously we did follow up with the veterinarian. I believe
Dr. May.
I believe that Tracy had reached out to Dr. May and got a response.
Right.
It seems that Dr. May was a little bit confused because she doesn't work in conjunction with, she was employing, so these are not separate entities as to what Dr. May's response was. The website does very clearly state that the bookings available are basic physicals. So I think that what we need to make sure that we emphasize here is that our statutes are very specific, that only veterinarians, and this is not just CBTs, but everybody, we cannot diagnose, prognose, perform surgery, or write prescriptions. And so while the response was very clear from Ms. McGill that she doesn't write prescriptions or perform surgery, that prognosis piece is a big sticking point that we have to be very, very conscientious of in our profession and making sure that professionally we are projecting ourselves appropriately. So there cannot be a physical exam. It's not possible within our scope of responsibility or allowable processes in our statutes. And the reviews that were also in our materials do state that she was very good at that. And And unfortunately, we just cannot be very good at that because we just absolutely do not have qualifications there. So
unless we're right there with the
vet. No, we cannot prognose, doesn't matter.
Okay.
Even if I'm working with a veterinarian. Now what I can do is a veterinarian can say, hey, Nikki, here's my prognosis. I need you to go speak to this client, you know, on my behalf because I'm doing this thing, right? I can go let them know, you know, Dr. James said, you know, this, that, and the other. I can't go and say, hey, here's how things look, right?
Okay.
And
so when I go to the vet tech is the one that does the temperature and those.
Those
things.
Are vitals, yep, yep. Okay. So we're allowed to collect vitals.
Okay.
We're allowed to ask questions on history. We're allowed to do client education, right?
Okay.
Those are all directed by the veterinarian. We're just not allowed to say, wow, we found this on physical exam. You
okay.
really need to, this potentially could happen, right? Because that's a prognosis. Your dog could have diabetes, your dog could have this, your dog could have that. This could happen, this could be the outcome. These are the tests you need to run. Now we can go back in and say, this is what the doctor found on exam. This is what test the doctor recommends. These are the things that the doctor is concerned about. Again, we just have to be very, we have to follow those rules and guidelines, but those things are under the direction of a veterinarian. So I can't go to somebody's home independently and do that.
Okay.
So, I mean, I would strongly advise that you seek legal counsel on what is available, but I can tell you what's here is not good. So, as far as this goes, I'm not really sure how I want to proceed here because it's clear to me that's being offered and that is a violation. And there's reviews saying that it's happened and that's a violation.
I think the hard part for me on this one was if you're doing an exam and giving vaccines, you're basically doing the exam and saying this pet's healthy enough for vaccines. So you are almost diagnosing the fact that this pet is healthy. Which,
but it's a prognosis, really, right? Because they're healthy enough to receive vaccines.
Well, or they're being diagnosed as healthy.
Your prognosis
is you're going to be fine because you're healthy.
Right, but at the same time, it could go bad right after that assessment because they get a reaction.
Yeah, I mean, I think the piece of doing an exam and determining whether a pet is healthy enough is the problem I have with it. If these pets were going to a veterinarian, so say for example, an old cat has chronic renal failure, and the veterinarian says you need to do sub-Q fluids every week, and that owner goes, I'm not doing sub-Q fluids because I don't do that kind of stuff. I don't like needles. My cat doesn't.
Right, if that's prescribed.
That, right. And so if a technician has a business that is, I go to your house and I do sub-Q fluids every week on your cat, that to me isn't anything that's practicing medicine. That's doing what a veterinarian prescribed to have happen.
Right.
And I think that's where it's a little bit different than what we're seeing here, which is these are exams to determine if a pet needs to go to a vet or not.
Right.
And these are vaccines or exams to determine if a pet's healthy enough for vaccines. That's my issue. It's not so much even the prognosis as it is you're deeming a pet healthy or not healthy and determining whether to go for a follow-up or an initial, not even a follow-up, but.
I agree. The we usually use prognosis for disorders. When you have a healthy animal.
And again, I'm looking at the wound care and things like that. I mean,
exactly.
Those are, and so the vaccine piece, I mean, was kind of really quick, she seemed to understand that, at least in the response, that right, you can't be doing that. And maybe you guys read it differently.
No, I agree.
Okay. So, I'm going on the general overall of we're offering physicals. It doesn't say just for vaccines. This is just, we're offering physicals.
And I agree, you can't say he's healthy, proceed with vaccine, Matt.
Right,
and
I'm a
doctor.
Even if you're just doing the vitals, which are allowed,
vitals, yes.
What's the point? You can't give them to anybody, and you can't tell them anything about the vitals.
Yeah.
Right?
Right?
So
no,
that's
yes,
a waste of time and effort.
Right.
I mean,
they know their dog has a normal temperature.
Other than the number in Fahrenheit or Celsius itself, are you allowed to tell them it's normal?
we're allowed to tell them what is deemed a quote-unquote normal range, but we can't make a full assessment of that patient. So the issue is that, yeah, it might be 102.5, but a doctor might say that's not okay.
Yeah.
And this is why, because of all the other exam things that the veterinarian found, right?
Yeah.
So it's...
My main sore point was the veterinarian referenced had no idea.
No, that exactly. All that was what I was saying. Dr. May was like, that's...
I mean, she's like, well, oh yeah, everybody knows that. Well, no, even the veterinarian had no idea all this going on.
Right.
In her absence, so...
And these are, and they are very two separate entities, at least from what I read in the response from Dr. May, and then when you looked at the website references, there is no reference to a veterinarian, as was found in our investigation that was cited. So there is no relationship there. Now they may have a relationship, but that's within Dr. May's business, which is appropriate.
Then, unlike a veterinarian, who you could be solo on your own,
yeah,
certified veterinary technician, unless they're tied to something. A clinic, a mobile clinic, some veterinarian somehow, they have to have that tie. Without that tie, there's no way to use that certificate.
Right,
it's useless.
The allowed things are things that quote unquote anybody can do, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can do a nail trim, you can do ear cleanings, you can do things like that, but those are allowed outside the scope of veterinary medicine. And so many of the things that as CBTs that we are authorized to do are because we are under the direct supervision of a veterinarian. Now the thing that elevates us is that, like she said, she has the education, she went through the proper channels and has her CBT with the state of Arizona, and those are excellent. However, that does not limit, that does not expand upon what we are allowed to do. Our scope is those.
I can do pregnancy testing too, but I'm not allowed to.
Yes.
I still got my certificate.
Unless it's on your own. You can do it on your own. That's...
I don't have anything to do it on.
Well, darn. So there is a problem here. And is in order to determine, I would say more specifically, what she is or isn't able to do in her business, I mean, I would say that's legal advice there. But we can absolutely say there's specific things on here that you cannot do. And that's diagnose, prognose, perform surgery, and write prescriptions. And there is a diagnosis, prognosis aspect here. And whenever you're administering vaccines, that's essentially prescribing care too. So I just don't know how exactly we want to proceed in this case, to be honest with you, because we have the evidence of issues.
I mean, it's kind of an interesting one, because if she was not a CBT,
we have no.
She still couldn't do the diagnosis and the vaccines.
But that gets referred to the law enforcement.
That's practicing without a license. But
it's unlicensed practice.
But if you were cleaning ears and doing sub-Q fluids and that kind of thing,
definitely connected.
That's not, in my mind, that's not practicing veterinary medicine.
So
the reason she's here is because she's licensed.
Yeah.
And that part of it.
Right. And that's also a big part of at least the evidence that we have for advertising, that she's licensed.
Right.
So that's a public trust.
I mean, I feel like in this case, like, she's come forward, she says she's admitted that she doesn't plan on breaking the rules and she wants to correct it. So I think at this point we can easily say you can't do examinations, you can't give any recommendation as to whether a pet's healthy enough for vaccines, you can't give vaccines, and you can't give any kind of guidance on whether an animal should be seen or not if they're employing you to come do this exam.
Right.
If
but as a new CBT in the state, she is a CBT as of March of 2023.
Right.
You had to pass our jurisprudence, which I would expect a CBT to know what you can and can't do.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Like, we should already, we should already be there.
Yeah, but I don't know. I see it confused a lot just because all states are a little bit different, and what this might be a business model that was copied from somewhere else, and you didn't go back and check, and you thought you were not doing something that you can't because vaccines are sold over the counter, and like, I can see where this gets out of control. I wish there had been more due diligence on looking into it a little bit more and maybe calling the office of Victoria and saying, hey, this is what I want to do. Like, I wish there had been more of that. We wouldn't be here right now.
Or changing the website prior to coming in today would also show. If you said the website still remains with all of that information. I understand she's saying that it sounded like when she sat here, she was saying, tell me what I need to do and what I can and can't do. But it was kind of, I think, clear once she received the, you know, the initial complaint, what some of those issues were. So
I agree with Nikki.
But I
don't know that we can tell her what she can do. I think we can say, can't do these things.
Yes, we
can. Anything else you're going to do, go get your own counsel on, because I don't necessarily know that we can do that.
Okay. Right. No, because as far as like a business model and a business plan and how you're going to present yourself, that's an attorney. Like that, especially whenever you're working within the licensure.
But I think you can say that part of that business plan, the certified veterinary technician is not part of that business plan.
Correct.
Because whatever you're going to do by yourself without the supervision of a veterinarian has nothing to do with being a certified veterinary technician. Period.
I mean, you still are a certified veterinary.
You are, but it has nothing to do with what service you can legally offer.
Right, because we have a list of four things we cannot do.
That's every technician, right. Certified or not. That's,
Exactly. That's everybody. But I'm saying it's literally a list of four things we cannot do. Where there may be, and there are some states that say CBTs can do A, B, C, D, E, and some of them are A, B, C, D, but still only with a veterinarian, right? So it doesn't, in some ways it's clearer, I guess. We have the investigation that was done. We do know that there are things that are being done that we are not able to do. I guess my question to you all is, do we offer a letter of concern? Do we find the violations? Because we do have the investigative information that shows that there's a violation. And, you know, we offer continuing education to be more educated on those things. I mean, I guess I'm a lot stuck there.
I appreciate that she's here today.
Yes.
And that she came before us. So that Absolutely. Always helps me where she's, I want to take her at her word that she's saying, you know, I want to be within the law. And so I think for me, at least, that's where I would like to, you know, give her this opportunity, I would be more in favor of a letter of concern. However, understanding that if come back, see her again soon, then, you know, that would be an issue. But that's just, but I understand there's clear violations, but I don't know. What does everybody else think?
I was leaning more toward civil penalty just because the veterinarian named had no idea.
I would be on board with a letter of concern, but I think we probably need to do some follow-up as maybe checking in periodically to make sure we're not seeing a reoccurrence of things that shouldn't be done, right? Like, I just feel like we know this is out there, saying you can't do this and assuming that it stops puts us in a little bit of a predicament. I think we know that it's going on, it needs to stop, and we need to ensure that it stops somehow.
Right.
That's easy with a website, but with social media. It's tough to monitor.
What is Ms. Solomon? You look like you
have. Yes, and can Mike, it's a question. We can't direct her to change her website as part of a letter of concern. And it's my understanding that the website still reflects the incorrect information. So for that reason, I think we need to proceed with a violation.
I know.
It's simply because we can't order anything or recommend changes or suggest reading the statutes and rules as part of the letter of concern.
I think it was, it just seemed, I got the impression that it was waiting for this meeting today to have more clarification, and I'm not saying that that was, you know, but that was just, I got, so.
Okay, well,
is there?
I just wanted to clarify, I'm sorry, we stepped out when Ms. Magill had spoke with the board, but when I went back in, I could not find the website again.
It's up, the ad had her website incorrect.
Well, in my history it was up, but when I just searched her name or typed
this in. This is today.
It is today?
Yes, yeah.
Well, this, because when I typed up, yeah, I don't think it is. Can you clarify that?
That one's not mine.
No, I know, that one, is your website still up?
It should be still up, and I have made some changes to it. I've removed the vaccinations off of it.
Thank you, I didn't hear your comments, so I wanted to make sure that that was.
Well, I defer, again, Nikki, or anybody for that matter, can make a motion, can, so let's go ahead, we'll do that, and then see where we end up.
Nikki?
Yeah.
I mean, I think if she has made changes, then even a letter of concern becomes, to me, more important, more applicable, because I feel like she is trying to make the changes. We're not here to just.
No, it's not for punitive reasons. It is for public health reasons, and.
But if we do a letter of concern and she changes what we say, absolutely. But that's where I'm like, you still need to get your business model in order. And maybe we ask to come, have her come back in a month and tell us what she's doing, what she's found out, and what, like, let's make sure we're comfortable with it.
So I then would make a motion to pend this case until next month and invite Ms. Magill back for an update. That's my motion.
So you'd recommend that she adjust her website based on hearing the conversation today and consult with people that know more than we do, whoever she decides is what she needs to do, and come back with us with a plan of what her business is going to look like and what her website now looks like, and then we can decide.
That's our motion.
Okay. My concern is I don't know that we need to get into the details of a business plan.
No, I'm not asking for the details of a business plan. I'm asking for compliance with our statutes. Yeah. So that's why I'm asking independent and return in 30 days. Yeah. Now, those are things that we've discussed that Dr. James has clarified, and I think that's fair to put out there for consideration.
Okay, so we have a motion to pend this case until next month.
Second.
Hopefully, and second, okay. Is there any further discussion? Hopefully everybody is on the same page here now. So, okay, there's no further discussion. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you for being here. So if you have any questions, just make sure you're following up with board staff from now until next month.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's keep rolling here. A little slow through these first ones, but so we are now on number 18, 2429, in regards to Jessica Schneider, DVM. You'll read the summary, Tracy?
Yes, case 2429, the complaint was Catherine Anger, and the respondent is Jessica Schneider, DVM. Complainant stated that the respondent has provided spay-neuter services for the rescue organization through a mobile clinic on four occasions. Approximately 120 animals were altered since November 2022. Complainant stated that five animals have died under respondent's care in that time. Complainant expressed concerns that respondent's anesthesia protocol was flawed, and she listed two cats on the complaint form that have died in respondent's care. Sergio, a 4-month-old male domestic short-haired cat, and Raven, a 2-year-old female domestic short-haired cat. And this case was brought to you for your review and consideration.
Okay.
And you know what, before you start, Mr. Stoll is
We do have the complainants present, and then Mr. Stoll is here on behalf of Dr. Schneider.
No,
okay, so
Mr. Stoll is monitoring this one.
Correct.
So we've got the two complainants, and you are both welcome to come forward and introduce yourselves, and then I can give you 5 minutes for both of you to speak,
no
okay?
Problem.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. My name is Mary Dondenville. I'm a board member with Itty Bitty Bottle Babies. We are a rescue, kitten rescue in Arizona City. This is our director, Catherine Enninger. We are here today to address concerns with Arizona Vet Direct. We are not here to cast aspersions on Dr. Schneider's abilities as a veterinarian. We are only here because we have concerns regarding the protocols Dr. Schneider employed during these mass spay-neuter days that we hosted. In June of 2022, our organization received a grant from the Bonnie K. Foundation to provide low-cost spay-neuter clinics in central Pinal County. The emphasis was on trap-neuter return, as well as low-cost services for members of our community. To implement these clinics, we began using mobile veterinary services, Asavet out of Tucson and MASH out of Scottsdale. During this period, we hosted monthly clinics, altering 30 to 60 animals at each one. By the end of 2022, neither Asavet nor MASH were able to accommodate us because of a lack of qualified veterinarians and vet techs for the mobile units. We ended our monthly clinics in November. In January of 2023, we started working with Dr. Schneider. Between January and March, we held three clinics under her care. At each of these clinics, Dr. Schneider altered about 30 animals. Also at each of these clinics, one of our animals died. And in one case, there were two. We curtailed the clinics during the summer, but Dr. Schneider does do weekly clinics in Casa Grande and for veterinary services. And on August 12th, she agreed to alter one male kitten for us. The kitten did not survive. Each of these losses, Dr. Schneider told us there must have been underlying health conditions of which we were not aware. These were three kittens, a cat of 18 months, and an adult cat of approximately 2.5 years. We tried to talk with Dr. Schneider on each of these occasions about the deaths, and were repeatedly told that the animals must have had underlying health issues. One of our clients was told that his cat died because it had leukemia, something Dr. Schneider determined without blood work. The owner of the older cat was told her cat had an undiagnosed heart condition, one that was not evident when she gave birth and nurtured kittens a few months earlier. One of the animals in our care was a 4-month-old healthy male. As you know, alteration surgery on a male is pretty straightforward, and it only takes a few moments. And yet Sergio, this 4-month-old male kitten, was not able to survive those rigors. The others who died were feral cats, so we don't know what their health conditions were. However, of the many, many TNR cats who have been altered at our spay-neuter clinics, only those treated by Arizona Vet Direct have presented these fatal underlying conditions. The concerning aspect of this is that of all the clinics in 2022, no animals died. Since this spring, we have had kittens altered at Altered Tails, Mesa Spay Neuter Clinic, MASH in the Phoenix area, and Asavet Santa Cruz Veterinary Services in Tucson. According to our records, we've altered nearly 300 animals during these clinics over the past 2 years and never had a fatality. Only kittens treated by Dr. Schneider suffered these underlying conditions. Again, we're not saying Dr. Schneider is not a good veterinarian. We're saying that something in the methodology she uses when conducting these mass spay-neuter clinics in a mobile environment needs to be addressed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you being here.
Let's see, looks like Dr. James, you are the lead on this case.
No, we don't have Dr. Snyder. I take it.
Oh. No, just Dave is monitoring.
Okay. You know, this was initially when I went through this case, obviously there's we're hearing some conflicting stories from what was in the medical records and what was in the statement from the veterinarian versus what we're hearing today, right? The cat with leukemia was apparently tested positive and euthanized, not it died on the table because it had leukemia. Two very different things. I don't know, you know, obviously we're going to have to take that into account, that some of this is, as he said, she said, or just miscommunication between the two. In looking at Sergio, which was the cat that we had the most information on, and looking at protocols, I obviously don't use this protocol, but calculating dosage-wise, it didn't seem off to me. The amount of animals that have passed away is higher than kind of the standard average. That I would agree with. What I don't know is when you're doing feral cats, and it's not even that the feral cats may have an underlying health condition, it's that they may have more adrenaline, maybe more amped up when they're coming in, and maybe a higher risk than another cat, maybe. But the amount of pets that have had complications does seem to be a little bit higher, and I'm surprised as a veterinarian that we haven't done more looking into why, right? Like there's not been, at least as far as what she put forth, any necropsies or any, let me look at my protocols or let me adjust my protocols or anything like that. But again, I don't see anything in there that is definitely, like that is a violation. I would like to see that there's more involvement and trying to figure it out, but I don't see a violation. So I don't know if anyone else picked up on anything, but this is going to be a tough one just because we really are going off of very minimal medical records and that's it.
Right.
Agree.
May I ask a question?
Oh, sorry, not at this time.
So I would also put in there that even though we have these, I mean, you're comparing different veterinarians using different protocols with
different
groups of cats.
Yeah. Different
right?
patients.
I mean, each in different locations, but each one, each group is a different group. So there's different dynamic, individual dynamics within each of those groups. So there's no, I mean, it's anecdotal. I mean, I can see how you come up with the anecdotal, but it is anecdotal, not scientific.
Well, that's where I feel like, yes, there's enough of a concern to say, maybe we should look into this, but not enough to say this is a violation. I mean,
yeah.
I don't see anything that she did. The drug dosages and I mean, I don't know.
Dr. James, you've worked in this situation before,
yeah.
Right? Right, with doing
yeah.
massive. Okay, so my question to you is, and the thing that I didn't hear and haven't seen any of the materials is, when you are doing, let's say, 30 or 70 procedures and you're examining these pets prior, are there any that you're like, yeah, I'm not doing that one today?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's
but
my
on
question.
On feral cats, the exam is,
yeah. I understand that. I really do, because I've been in very in smaller situations, is that right? That, yep, okay.
Yeah.
But I've also been in situations where even when they are sedated, the veterinarian will decline to do them. So I'm just asking, in these mass situations, have you declined? Because I guess that would be my question is, maybe there's been many cats, dogs, whatever, declined.
Right.
And so ergo, you don't have that issue where if these ones weren't declined, you could.
I didn't see anything in the notes on these that she noticed anything under anesthesia.
No. I'm not saying she would have. I'm just saying, like, maybe they just weren't declined.
Yeah.
And
she
as
might
opposed
be
to moving forward.
Right.
I mean,
like
it's possible
that
that
were done by this rescue. Then they
right. Maybe there were patients that were turned away for a reason. And
yeah. I mean, it's hard when you're doing a feral group of cats too, because one, you have very little information on the history. You don't know where they're necessarily going to. You don't know anything about them, and you half the time can't touch them. But when you get them under, you know, especially on a cat neuter, you might notice that, there's a wound here that we need to probably give an antibiotic injection for, but you're not going to really be able to treat it. And so do you wake that cat up and not do the neuter, or do you do the neuter and give the antibiotics and hope for the best?
That's which the is the decision you make at that point.
Right. You have to make especially that decision, and it's not how you would handle it if it was a pet cat, but it is different when you're dealing with feral cats, and that's why I'm like, it. Some of these were feral and some of them weren't, right? So we did have a couple that Sergio, I guess, was not. But I just can't say that I'm seeing anything that makes me go, oh, this is alarming and this is why this is happening.
Yeah. I would say that I would make one comment about the medication administered. I personally would not use aceprolazine in a group of young cats because of its duration of action. And if you, it's long time. It stays in them a long time. So I personally would not use that. Obviously, that's been used on a lot of cats, and they did fine. Because we're looking at herd health here, if you would.
Yeah, and that's where I wish that she were here, or that she would have said, like, I am looking at my protocols to see if there's anything I could change, or I am doing a necropsy to see if there was something that I could have done differently.
Yeah, like, that was my point.
I wish that was the case, and hopefully from hearing this, that is what she does next, which is, and I think that that's what the group was trying to relay to her, which is, hey, we're seeing a higher complication. Can you look into this a little bit? And so maybe this is what is needed, is to hear that, you know, while there's not anything specific, there might be things you could do better or do differently.
Do you think that the records were adequate for us to really know what was going on with these cats?
Well, I think the records are a little bit confusing based on the testimony, because like leukemia testing.
Yeah.
That's different if you're not actually running a test and you said have leukemia. But again, you know, it's like, I don't know. And on a lot of these, you're just not going to have any kind of exam, real exam.
Right.
So
that should be documented.
Yeah.
Yeah. Appears healthy. And sometimes as far as you can go.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think in this case, I would make a motion in 2429 that we find no violations. And just issue a letter of concern over ensuring that protocols are being followed and that there isn't anything differently, and that your medical records are as, you know, clear as possible as to how these cats were examined and what level of exam you were able to do.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to offer a letter of concern in this case. Is there any other further discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you for being here. Okay, is it okay if we do one more before we break? No?
It's going to be a long one.
Okay.
It's going to be long.
Oh, you're right. I apologize. So yes, let's go ahead and take a quick 5-minute break.
Thank you. He would have been punching me in the shoulder. Saying hurry.